Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, helping product managers become product masters. Listen and get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad. Thanks for joining me for another valuable discussion to help product managers become product masters. Becoming a product master involves four levels of knowledge, and you can see how to move through the levels in the Product Mastery Roadmap, which is available at the same place where you'll find the summary as well as all the details of the discussion with my guest for this episode. And that's at theeverydayinnovator.com/112. Now, lean concepts are being applied across organizations, but I haven't spent time considering how they would be applied to marketing. That is until I had a discussion with my guest, Joe Dagher. As product managers are frequently involved with aspects of marketing, I thought these concepts would be important to share, which is why I asked Joe to join me on The Everyday Innovator. Joe describes himself as the chief antagonist of Business 901, a firm specializing in bringing the continuous improvement process to sales, marketing, and service. His process thinking comes from over 30 years in marketing within a wide variety of industries and also applying lean concepts to that experience. Joe has been part of several startups, a few turnarounds, and now works creating digital marketing processes, primarily with SaaS-type companies. I hope you enjoy the discussion. Joe, thanks so much for joining the Everyday Innovator podcast.
Oh, I'm happy to be here, Chad. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you could make it. I appreciate John Latham, who is a friend and also a previous guest on the show, introducing us and being able to talk about a concept I don't know a whole lot about, which is lean marketing and sales. And as product managers, we interact with marketing frequently. Sometimes we're even aligned. Sometimes we're part of that product manager. The product managers are part of the marketing group. Sometimes we're part of engineering. Sometimes we sit somewhere else. But certainly it's a key function that's in the world of product managers. I'm curious about this whole concept. So can you kind of explain your approach to lean marketing and sales and how it applies inside an organization?
Well, lean marketing, might be a fuzzy concept to some of us, right? As you mentioned there, but product managers would play a key role in it, very much so. Because what lean marketing is, I try to take it as a sense that it's really learning. Okay. Mm-hmm. When we think of PDCA, right? And the very typical continuous improvement.
Because we have people listening from all over the spectrum. So the plan, do, check, act cycle from Deming on how we analyze a process and prove it, right?
Yes. And, it's continuous improvement. And it's really the basis of scientific learning, right? Mm-hmm. Scientific methodology. And we just apply that to marketing. And, and that's what we're supposed to be about in marketing, is more about learning about our customers and what their needs are. And I always use this reason that lean marketing has kind of surfaced, is I always use the analogy, that marketing is very much, it's not so much anymore about getting the message out. It's just as much as getting the message in.
Right.
And the user research and everything is key things that product managers are looking for. So we go hand in hand with product managers.
Yeah, there's two places where that really seems to be becoming more prevalent. Social media has helped change that message a lot, right? Instead of just outbound marketing, now there's so much more inbound marketing going on and customers reaching out to companies and having some influence there. And that's just the smart product management objective of let's deeply understand our customers and know how we provide them value. So this sounds like, the focus here is on learning. But when I first hear lean, the background of lean comes out of Deming's work with Toyota and that Toyota production system. But that was actually the roots of what Eric Ries did with Lean Startup, the book that became really popular a few years ago and continues to be very popular. And so I kind of always, when lean comes up, I never quite know which aspect of lean we're looking at, right? And lean startup is the first thing that kind of pops into my mind. How do you view lean? Let's make sure we're thinking of lean in the right way here together.
Well, I think that's a great question, because when you think about that, lean startup, I always laugh and say anyone over the age of 35, 40 thinks of traditional lean. Anybody under that age, lean is lean startup. Okay. Right. So you got to phrase it to who you're talking to a little bit. But lean startup is very powerful and in that, but it's more of that exploration. Okay. And lean is so much more than that. That's always just one part of it. Mm-hmm. I think of, lean, of course, is PDCA, as I mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. The continuous improvement aspect. But a big part of lean is standard work. Okay. And that's SDCA. And then we go to the lean startup, which I actually call it EDCA, Explore, Do, Check, Act. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you need. You need all three components.
And walk through those again with us. So we got the PDCA, which probably more of us are familiar with that those activities of checking what we planned and seeing what was working and making modifications to it. And then you said STCA?
SD.
SD, okay.
Okay, it's standard work.
Standard work.
It's still standard, do, check, act, okay? You know, is how it's termed. But it's the same thing. And then I mentioned EDCA, which is explore, do, check, act. So it's really those three components, and every company needs a little bit of both. I mean, you know, you're going to have X amount, you know, exploration going on, seeking new markets, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to have a little bit, that's, you know, EDCA. You're going to have a little bit of PDCA. You're going to mm-hmm. be improving, okay, your products for, for existing customers. You're going to be improving, existing products to go to new markets, okay, trying to that. Then you have standard work. And mm-hmm. You'll look at standard work because that's really what puts groceries on the table, right? Right. You know, with the repetitive, the repetition, the effective and the efficiency that everybody wants out of the blocks with marketing. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's why we take, traditional lean people, the value stream managers and everything, mm-hmm. they'll take lean and they'll think of creating a value stream map, getting rid of all the waste, creating flow, seeking perfection. And that's fine with standard work, but it does, how do you find new customers? So those are the components, and that's kind of how lean marketing differs a little bit with that, traditional lean thinking inside the factory.
Okay, so we saw the issue of reducing waste, seeking to improve efficiency and effectiveness in that, standard work, the process improvement piece, and then in your EDCA, the exploration. I imagine you say you're learning through all of these, certainly.
Oh, certainly, yes.
And in the exploration, you're learning more about what we could do next, right, in terms of what we could do for the customer.
Yeah, it's the more simpler way to put it, and I'm not sure it's simpler without a diagram in front of me, okay? Mm-hmm. But if you think of exploration, you're going after new markets, new customers, right, mm-hmm. and new products.
Right.
If you think of standard work as existing products and existing customers, that kind of frames both ends of it. Mm-hmm. And then PDCA is kind of in the middle there, right?
Yep. Improving existing operations.
Yeah. Improving existing operations or seeking new markets with existing products. Okay. You kind of sandwich it in between exploration.
Okay. So I'm starting to catch on a little bit how you're applying this to marketing. When it comes to marketing sales, we seem to have some areas where lean could be applied as you're talking through this. Where do you see it fitting, and where has it been limited, right? How can this really help us more?
Well, I think where it's limited, when you think of the Eric Ries concept of Lean Startup,
yeah,
okay, is that we're developing an iterative approach, okay, to marketing. Anymore, things change so quickly, okay? It's great to have this vision out here, mm-hmm. all right? Then we kind of create this idea of where we want to go. All right. I mean, pretty standard stuff, not saying new, but now we have to iterate to get there. All right. We have to put some challenges in front of us. Okay. We have to create, let's say, deliberate practice to get there. Okay. We're not, you can't just sit there and say, oh, here it is. Here's a step-by-step plan, because that marketing doesn't work that way. Sales doesn't work that way. We don't have control, do we? The customer has control. So, we can't even make plan do work inside the factory, let alone with customers outside the factory. So we think of that agile approach, okay? We think of an iterative process, and mm-hmm. and we start experimenting. I don't even call things marketing campaigns anymore. I call them marketing experiments, all right? and they fit there a little bit. But you go there and you just take it, and it's a very iterative approach, it's a learning approach, kind of that sprint scrum type action sometimes, or even a Kanban. But you think of taking some type of thing, breaking it down, you know, what's the simplest thing I can do, the assumption I have, and right. How can I prove it, and how can I move forward? That's PDCA.
When it comes to marketing experiments, could you give us an example of what that might look like compared to a campaign?
Well, you know, I just don't like to use the word campaign, okay, yeah. If I have an event out there, because campaign is kind of like this war. It's me, it's us against the customer, right? You know, we're sitting there and we're going to drive and try to manipulate him into doing something we want him to do, mm-hmm. All right? I look at it as an experiment that we're going to go ahead and we're going to seek. We're going to prove our assumptions based on what right. We think, and we take it out to a customer, and you know, and what's a great tool that we have with today is data and analytics, right? And what that allows us to do, it allows us to learn, you know, at a very fast rate from customers. So that's what we do, is we really sit there, and I look at experimentation as it's creating those feedback loops, going in the old mm-hmm. system thinking type thing. You know, PDCA is double loop learning, right?
Right.
And you know, and that's the part that makes Lean so adaptable to marketing, because that is where marketing's went. It's become so digital, all right? And you hear the word digital marketing. Well, I have a hard time distinguishing between, you know, digital marketing, non-digital marketing. What is that? I don't even know what that is anymore, because they're so intertwined.
Yeah, I do like the experiment language. I've used it in other places too, because it makes things less big and complicated and maybe bureaucratic in a sense. Because right? When we talk about a marketing campaign, that sounds like something that we've planned out that we think is going to work, and now we execute it. And it just gives this kind of picture, I think, to those involved that we know what we're doing, and things are going to work the way that we think they will, right? And hopefully we know what we're doing, but we realize there's a lot of unknowns in this whole process. And thinking of it as a marketing experiment is more in that lean startup perspective of, you know, what are our hypotheses? What do we think we need to get accomplished here? And I suspect that you're making smaller steps towards what might look like a larger campaign as you start constructing it that way.
Yes. And you know, and it's all about feedback. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really reacting to the feedback, learning from the feedback. All right. And, you know, you're not going to change things from one phone call to the next phone call, because you have to have a decent sample rate of some type. Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so it's not as iterative as that, but it's not as, you know, what you do, you have to break the experiments down into small enough steps. Okay. So that you can evaluate and learn from them. All right. You know, usually we always had this big goal that, okay, we need to get 100 people into a webinar, right?
Right.
Okay. You know, we got 30 days to do it. So that's what we start marketing towards. And we have all this scripts and calls and things we want to do. But really what we should do is we should say, okay, what can we do next week to prove that we're headed the right direction? Okay, what groups do we need to call to make sure? What are we going to learn the quickest to be able to segment the groups and knowing which group to call, who we can reach out to, who we can email, and not just, you know, like exploration out of new, you know, brand new people, but also from existing people, adjacent markets. Okay, and there's a lot of adjacency, I should say, quote unquote, that goes into lean marketing, because we're not always out there exploring the new, because that's such a high risk. And that's why I say lean startup is just part of lean marketing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because we're going to go to existing customers to see if they want to go to the webinar. We're right. going to try something new with them, maybe a different method to reach out to different parts in their organization. Mm-hmm. And we're also going to explore, you know, other markets, other adjacent markets.
Yeah, established companies tend to sell to their existing customers. As you said, that's lower risk. And where we run into disruptive innovation is when the startup comes along and finds a whole new market that we hadn't pursued yet that was sitting there. And I like how the aspects of PDCA, SDCA, and EDCA capture kind of that realm, right? The different areas that we could go with existing markets or pursuing new markets too, and exploring what might be beneficial to the organization. As you've done this, I'm curious what you see in terms of metrics for measuring benefits. And maybe you can apply this through an example for us. And so this is a little bit more tangible for us. But as we've talked so far, it sounds like some clear benefits are taking things in smaller chunks in an experimental way. So you're using resources probably more effectively and not wasting as many resources. But how do you go about measuring, you know, lean marketing progress? Is this, you know, revenue, market size? What do you do?
Well, I think it's a lot of it has to do with exactly the markets we're in, the people that we, you know, the customers we're addressing. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, and just say there's this metric out here that works for everyone. Okay. And what you really have to do is see what your experiment is framed around. Okay. If you can, you know, let's face it. If we have metrics, okay, if we have a digital thing of how many signups, how many looks we get on our web page, okay, to kind of make it, you know, simple ones, okay. If we have those type of metrics available in one experiment, but if we use another type of experiment we don't have metrics on, well, which one should we lead with? The one we have metrics, right? You know, the ones that we can determine. So when you think of all the data that's out there, the data analytics, the predictive analytics, all right, that that you can, you know, from websites, there's, you know, tons of software out there in the digital world, all mm-hmm. right? Surveys are okay, all right? Focus groups are kind of blasé and stuff. Yeah, I mean, those are all good things, but it's really about the questions you ask. And in the digital world, using the right tools anymore. And I don't even know where to start with what tools we have out there, Chad. I mean, because there's so many, mm-hmm. okay, you know, that you can actually measure things with. But, you know, but to keep it simple is the first thing you have to do is determine who's going to be looking at the measurements. And then also, okay, how often they're going to be looking at them. And what they're going to use out of the metrics, because we can be, you know, we can pull up 5,000 metrics anymore on anything. And, you know, of clicks, visits. I mean, I can tell who visited my web page, you know, just by their IP address. And I can get a note from that someone from Boston, Massachusetts and someone from Microsoft, Boston, Massachusetts visited my website in seconds. I can tell someone opened my email up. You know, and that I sent, so I need to call him in the next 15 minutes. Right. All right. I, you know, we have all this different data that we're going about. And the whole key is to build, when you're building a feedback system, is make sure that you only try to use what you need to use. Okay. And for it to make sense that, and I'm kind of, you know, keep it simple, stupid, okay, or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. is I'm very much into that. And it starts with is really starting with a feedback plan of mm-hmm. how you're going to measure things. And, you know, and then sit back and see what tools that you're using and what's available to you very quickly, because there's, you know, there's practically anything out there anymore. It's just more of a time and a money thing than it is really a qualification of what you use.
Yeah. The tools for feedback have grown a lot. You know, Facebook has helped us and driven it in other aspects of advertising on the internet for sure. But this new millennium, we've seen a lot more tools that help us get a handle on the real return on investment for our different marketing efforts. And it's interesting what we can do now. I did want to ask you about other kind of tools though. I want to get to, if we have the traditional marketing, and I'm not sure what is traditional anymore, but if we have what we might run into as a marketing organization, a marketing group inside a company that's not doing lean now, and we want to introduce them to lean concepts, I assume there's some steps and some tools that we would apply to make this happen. So if you were going to introduce lean to a marketing group, what do we go through?
I probably wouldn't call it lean. Okay.
good thing to know to start with.
What we basically do is, you know, the typical marketing process when you start any marketing plan is that you look at existing customers, existing structure, right? Mm-hmm. And what you really try to do is you try to document what people do. And if you call it standard work, what's the first thing? okay, you know, everything's different here, right? No, no, this is marketing, this is sales. We, you know, and, you know, you hear those types of things. But the first thing you do with a mature company or someone is, okay, what is your standard work? What do you do? Mm-hmm. Okay. Then we just kind of pick, all right, what, where do you want to go? What's the next thing? You know, what's the next thing? And we say where you want to go. And then we kind of shorten it down and we get it down to, let's say, one or two experiments and kind of dig a little deeper. And then we go, you know, and we determine how that, how we can improve that. And what is our standard work? We create a gap. Okay. And then we iterate to close that gap. And a great tool to use to do all that is the Lean A3. Okay, if you're familiar with an A3 or A3 thinking, is that, and it basically is just one page, one document where the left side is plan and then the right side is do, check, act. And that's really how I've introduced it to a lot of companies. That the other tool that we use is more of the marketing kata. Okay, I call it a marketing kata, but it was it's a break off from the Toyota kata that Mike Rother introduced, which kata thinking is really how to develop deliberate practice. Okay, and which again, that's all we're trying to do in our marketing is we sit there, we document standard work. Okay, then we create where we want to go.
Okay.
Then we focus on a certain area to help us get there, right? You know, because we narrow it down to a focus, whether it's, you know, a people, a process, focus, or, you know, that. But, and then we just go ahead and we look at that and we break the experiment down into a, you know, some small step and we iterate towards it.
Which sounds pretty straightforward when you walk through it.
It's not hard. It's not hard. You know, people are trying to do it. It's not hard, but it's not easy to do.
Right.
I mean, you quantify standard work with a marketing team, okay, or a sales team. And they struggle with that concept because everybody, especially because everybody is trying to make it effective and efficient, right? And that's not, you know, that's not the idea. You know, standard work in Lean is just really document what you do and create a repeatable process out of it. All right. Because if it doesn't repeat, it's not a standard, right? If you can't repeat it.
Repeatability is a good place to start, isn't it? When we want to work towards any kinds of maturity in our processes.
Yeah. And there is. And, you know, if you're digging too deep, maybe you need to step back and look at it a little bit bigger picture, you know, and that. But it's very similar. But the thing that most people try to, you know, they got this effective and efficiency thing in their mind. Versus, you know, here's what we do. Here's what we want to go. And let's just iterate towards it. Let's see what works better. Okay. And, you know, if we reach our goal, okay, you know, it's not all about effective and efficiency. It's about reaching the goal, right?
It's a smart way to think about things, just, you know, making that iterative progress towards where you think you want to head, right? And doing the experiments to do that. And that also seems to takes pressure off the people involved, in the sense that we all recognize we can't see far enough out to know, you know, wherever that field goal is or the target is we want to hit, we can't possibly see all the steps to get there. But if we take little steps towards it and fine tune as we go, we have a much better chance of hitting in the target that we're, that is of interest to us to hit. So tools there that you shared was the A3 form, which is, like you said, just the one page really shows the plan, do, check, act summary on one page. And then marketing kata, which is deliberate practice. Can you tell us more about that tool?
What the marketing kata is, if you're systems thinkers out there, okay, are familiar with the levels of perspective that Daniel Kim did years ago in the Senge and, you know, in the fifth discipline era, let's say, okay, in the early 90s. It's very similar to that, but it's a derivative from Toyota Kata, okay, by Mike Rother. And what you do is you create this vision, all right, and then you create a challenge question or a focus question, okay? Kind of group that around, okay? You know, you kind of put some constraints and boundaries to things. Then you develop your standard work. And then, just as I said, you pick an area, okay, that will bring you closer to that challenge question. And after that, okay, you iterate towards that smaller area. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you know, there's, it's a whole procedure to do it, but it's very much very similar to that levels of perspective that, Daniel Kim had. And, you know, and I, and the path least resistance by Robert Fritz is another one, because what Fritz talked about is there was a rubber band. Okay. And if you think about, and let me get this right, if you think about when you have to create tension to be able to move, and once it starts getting slack, you got to move it out a little bit to create more tension to keep moving. So there's always got to be constant tension. All right. Is where we're going. And that's what we're looking with customers. When you think about interacting with customers, right, there has to be somewhat constant tension. There has to be some curiosity out there. That's what causes someone to click, right? Causes someone to ask, is that. So we're looking for that constant tension of what's on the other side of the door. Okay.
Do I want to walk through that door or not?
Well, I got to feel comfortable enough.
Right.
That I want to walk through the door, right? You know, that's marketing's job, is making someone feel comfortable enough that they want to open the door and see what's behind it. But there's got to be that apprehension, that tension, okay, that causes them to click and to move through. But, right. You know, Kata is a great tool, and it just is a method of simply developing deliberate practice. Because once you develop, mm-hmm. Once you develop deliberate practice, once you develop the culture of PDCA, as I would call it, all right, of iterative thinking, there's no end to where you go. Exploration takes place. I mean, when you talk to most futuristic people and the futurist out there now, it's these adjacencies. It's these next steps that you take, and you don't know how you're going to get there. You challenge them. Mm-hmm. And that's from deliberate practices of always looking on the edges, always looking on, what's out there next, what's behind the door. And, you know, gee, that starts to sound like a marketing plan a little bit, right?
I'm thinking when you go in and you help companies with these sort of issues, you need to get yourself the giant rubber band that will like stretch around three people, just so you can help illustrate this tension and how we're going to move together and make all this happen well. And maybe you could, coin a rubber band and put your logo on it. And I think this would be very helpful.
Yeah. And that's from, Robert Fritz, and he's the guy that developed it in Senge's fifth discipline. That's who they get. Daniel Sims gives credit to back mm-hmm. around there. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is those concepts. Okay. And the systems thinking, I think is really come back now.
It has. Systems thinking is showing up in more places. And I think it's somewhat recognition of the silo cultures and organizations that we've created that are being managed rather independently and not having the synergies between them as we need them to have inside organizations.
Well, I think it's going back to knowledge learning. Mm-hmm. We're finally starting to realize, the learning organization is coming to fruition. All right. I think that's part of it. Also, I think one of the things is what's always happened with system thinking is that there was too much of a pause.
Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, what I mean is that when you implement system thinking, when you start thinking about system thinking, things were, and John Latham and I talked about this one time, it was very interesting, is that it was too much of a delay. All right, for something actually to happen. It was too far down the organization, 6 months, 9 months. What you did up here actually, from a systems perspective, mm-hmm. started taking place in other areas where you could recognize results. All right. The difference now is that we got so much data about what happened before us, right? Okay. We're constantly monitoring data, and now we're getting predictive analytics that is starting to shrink. You got those three forces coming together that make system thinking more realistic.
That's a good point. You can see the impact of your changes much more quickly than you could before.
And you could predict them. Mm-hmm. You know, you think it's going to happen because of the predictive analytics. All right. So you feel a little more confident investing a little more money, opening that next door.
Taking the next step. Absolutely. Yeah. Now, in this discussion, you mentioned culture, and I was going to ask you about that when you're putting these tools in place, you're pushing on how things are done now and wanting to do them differently. And you said you're basically creating a culture of PDCA. Talk about what's going on with that culture change and just how you have seen through your experiences trying to make a culture change that supports this lean marketing approach.
It is tough. Okay. I'll say that. I know of very few companies that really can hang on to it. And it's really, I've been doing this for 10 years now. Mm-hmm. Okay. And companies that have been successful are everybody has kind of taken part of it. Okay, you know, they take sections of it, make it work. Okay, and they do that very well. But it's very difficult to change the culture because at the end of the day, people still have to hit their numbers at the end of the quarter.
Right.
All right. And there's no one more driven, okay, to do that than sales and marketing. Yep. And there's no one more driven to do that than a sales guy getting paid on commission.
Yep.
Yeah. So that whole cultural aspect of lean marketing is very tough. Now we see it happening more in SaaS type companies. Hmm. Okay. Because they don't have as many salespeople. They don't have as many commissioned salespeople out there. It's more of a marketing perspective. Okay. Hmm. That you're getting people to go to click on the platforms that we're seeing now. You know, when you think of the Airbnbs and the Ubers and that, the direct sales are not as prevalent as what they were.
Right.
But as we develop and as we see things, especially the service dominant logic type thinking where value is co-created.
Yeah, co-created with the customer.
With the customer. And as you see them platforms develop, the idea of lean marketing becomes much more prevalent when, you know, against your product managers out there. Okay. You know, when you're product focused and most lean companies, traditional lean companies are very product focused. Mm-hmm. You know, they grew up in manufacturing, but when you're product focused, it's very difficult to think of those lean marketing concepts. Okay. You're driving that product for more sales because you're very transactional orientated. Okay? With the SaaS company and being more user, okay, oriented, you're much better. But you think of Mercedes-Benz, all right, and some of the things they just recently did. And as they've become a user centric, and you think of electric cars, how that's going to change the car industry. And the knowledge we gain from data.
The electric cars are a huge trend that will impact many areas. Give us an example of what was going on at Mercedes-Benz that you're thinking about.
Yeah, if you think about the Mercedes-Benz concept, okay, and how they move from being a completely, you know, who was more product dominant type thinking than Mercedes-Benz? You know, anyway, and how old the dealerships were. Mm-hmm. All right. One of the good examples I use is something like Mercedes had to retool all their old dealerships to start thinking more user centric.
Right.
And how they brought users into the culture. All right. You know, when you think of Toyota, what did they do to move into a new culture, a new type of thinking that was more customer centric? They did it with Lexus, but they brought in all new dealerships.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They didn't even try to retool their things. And that's what's so amazing what Mercedes did is they moved that from a, much more, I would say, a much more product focused to user focus, mm-hmm. Right? In the way, and they had to retool dealerships. And yeah. that's an amazing story, which Joe Michelli did in his latest book about Mercedes-Benz, which I recommend people to read it because it is such a good story about that. And I think I can do fairness to it by trying to explain it, actually.
Yeah, Joseph Michelli, I forget which book he started with. He analyzed Ritz-Carlton and their amazing customer service and customer experience. And Starbucks, and I don't know who else he's done, but Yeah, really good books to look at. The Mercedes-Benz example is great that sometimes we need that. We need to create our own disruption so we can do things differently. And clearly, Tesla has created disruption in the automotive industry by, they have electric cars, of course, but disrupting that dealer experience. I go to my mall and I go to a store that's like Apple to, you know, figure out if I want a Tesla or not. A very different dealer experience.
Well, you move the dealer away, and not to, you know, since we're on the, you know, the age of the politics and talking politics now. I mean, even when you think about President Trump, is it, you know, he's moved into social media. He's kind of, you know, removed the news from delivering the news. And, you know, he's disrupting that whole culture, and they're still, and a lot of the news people are still hanging on to and thinking, oh, he did this and he did that, and he did this. And they don't realize that he's completely disrupting the political scene by going direct.
As an aside, I think it's probably one of the best things that's happened for Twitter recently, having come out of a time when no one was interested in buying the company, when they were interested in selling. And now all of a sudden they are in the news all the time as an organization just by name. Can't hurt them any.
No, yeah, it's great. But that's good marketing nowadays. And it good is. What I'll call and what Lean allows you to do, and if I could say anything, okay, what Lean allows you to do is I always term the idea of is the ability to play in your customer's playground, mm-hmm. that user-centric focus that we were just talking about.
Yep.
And being able to be there. Okay, Cadillac. All right, probably realized over $5 million worth of ad exposure today because they had all the limos and all the SUVs in the parade today.
Not bad for Cadillac.
And so that is the idea of today's marketing. That's where marketing's going, is that you got to somewhat be in the playground. You got to develop relevance of where you're at. Just pushing the message out isn't effective anymore.
Right. People expect there to be a connection and interaction. And that's why the inbound marketing has become so prevalent, is we're not just pushing messages out anymore. I want to revisit this culture issue just for a moment too, though. You said it's very difficult for some really important reasons, right? If we're messing with the expectations that a marketing director has to meet next quarter, and that salesperson has the responsibility of meeting in order to get their bonus and, you know, meet their quotas and these sort of things. Those are very real issues that we would expect resistance around, right? Anytime we're making changes that impact someone's livelihood, that's personal resistance, right? All of a sudden, we're feeling that in a sense of, whoa, hold on, I don't want to go. I'm not up for this change that you're suggesting. When it comes to, you know, really respecting the people involved and overcoming that resistance, any tips, any suggestions to help us out with that?
But we go back to that basic idea is to develop small iterative practice, develop okay. deliberate practice and leave it grow. All right. Take small issues where they're, you know, where you start developing part of your marketing that isn't commission driven.
Yeah.
All right. And develop that deliberate practice. And as you sidestep the big issues. All right. You know, it doesn't work with this big. Dick, you know, this is this big message coming down. This is the way we're going to do it, right?
Right.
So we start with small areas that isn't going to affect the commission structure, that we develop and we start improving. Mm-hmm. We start getting people used to the culture, okay? Used to PDCA, all right? Looking at iterative processes. And as groups, teams move around, projects are shared, you know, what happens? That culture starts developing because, you know, and if it doesn't work within your company, there's reasons that it doesn't work. Why push it? Okay. Right. You know, we don't need to become lean, right? we need to build a good company is what we need to do. Right?
And start with the culture that's in place, take on the small issues, run our experiments. Don't try to change the commission structure overnight. And maybe some of those experiments turn out to being things that really help the salespeople and that you find opportunities to do more of that than for them because now you have some support from them.
So if sales sees it helping them, mm-hmm. all right, they're, you know, that. But the sales have changed. All right. It's not just we talked about the inbound and outbound. Mm-hmm. Right. They are our gateway to the customer. if you want to develop a lean culture, you want to develop pull and organization, okay, the sales guys are your integral part of it because they're more about bringing the message in. They're one of our huge feedback loops that we have to listen to and develop a structure for them. All right. Not, you know, and the first thing people think of a sales guy is what do they do? All right. They say, oh, we're going to get lean. So we need the sales guy to give us this report, give us this data, give us this and everything. And it's, we shouldn't be looking at it from that standpoint. Okay. We should be making how we're going to make the sales guys easier, his job easier, how we're going to use data to support him. And that data, when it is used, how can we gain feedback on it without making 50%, 70% of his job given insight and feedback, right?
Mm-hmm. So my big picture takeaway, and I want to share this not just to summarize, but give you the opportunity to correct me too on what I got wrong here. But my big picture takeaway of this is really looking at marketing sales in the way of what can we do to instead of some big campaign that we're trying to accomplish our objectives. Maybe we set out those objectives once a year, right? And how do we take steps to get towards that? Instead of doing that, looking at it in terms of what is the target we want to get to? And what's that first step that we could do that we might run a little experiment against to get us to that first step? And then we build on that and take the next step. And thinking about marketing in more of an iterative manner as opposed to the bigger campaign, bigger projects manner. Is that a fair way of at least how we've been characterizing lean applied to marketing and sales?
I think it's a very fair way. I think it is very much is that you know, you're going to have to see where you want to go, and you have to develop a current state if you're going to be effective. That's what you should be doing anyway, lean anything, okay, is that you should have documented processes in place. Mm-hmm. And then all you want to do is just pick something and improve upon it. Right. It's going to have an impact. Right? You don't want just, you know, it's fine to pick a problem, but you want to pick something that can have an impact and improve on it. And lean has a great set of tools, okay? You know, Kata, A3s, but all the different matrices, all the different things that we can improve processes with. It's got a great set of tools out there. Mm-hmm. All right. But it's really not about the tools. And everybody always hears that and things like that. But it's a mind shift. It's a mindset that, you know, we can do. And what really is the best mindset about it is that we can start without knowing the end. We don't have to see the finish line to start. We just have to see the first 100 yards.
This aligns really well with why Eric Ries wrote The Lean Startup, right? And his experience with that, which was with a startup company, built a product, and like three people bought the product. And that's a painful time to realize that even though you thought you had something really valuable, other people tended to disagree. And you want to take the steps ahead of time to figure out what is working and what isn't working. And one step at a time is better than that big approach. And by the time we have a product ready for the market, I mean, that's the bad time to be learning about what customers really want or not.
Yeah, and it's very well, it's documented. You know, if people go back and pull up Daniel Kim Levels of Perspective, okay, that type of thinking is right there, okay? And it's explained very well by him.
Not familiar with that one. Levels of Perspective, and you said Daniel?
Daniel Kim.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned him earlier. I'll have to look into him, too, and see what we can find about him. So I appreciate all the information on lean marketing and sales and kind of that experimental approach that I really resonate well with. And I also asked you for an innovation or success quote to bring us, and if you could share that and why you chose that one.
There was someone that I always enjoyed a tremendous amount. All right, was Peter Senge. Mm-hmm. All right, he was on stage with Dr. Deming, all right, and Brian Joyner, and I still am a disciple of probably more of them than I am the Toyota way, let's say, okay? But Senge always had a quote, and it tells you how long we've been trying to apply something to sales and marketing. But his quote is, sales and marketing have never been against systemizing the process. They have been against being systemized by the process.
Hmm.
And I always thought that was a great quote because we go in there with the first thing most lean companies try to do with their sales and marketing is they start trying to systemize sales and marketing, right?
Right.
Buy the processes, buy their tools. And the first thing they need to do is just sit back and get a current state, mm-hmm. see where sales and marketing want to go, and see how they can help them.
That's a good quote. Part of what you've talked about through this is we are putting more of the person back into the situation, having to think about what that next step is, as opposed to, I have seen, and I'm sure you have too, you know, organizations that the quote shows that are trying to create a step-by-step process that you follow, and we expect it to always work. And as you said earlier, what's different in all these situations is the customer, and you don't really have the control that you think you're going to have.
Yeah, and if you don't mind, I'd like to add one thing to that. Uh-huh. You know, you think about this, everybody has this idea, this sales funnel, right?
Right.
All right, that was created like back in 1880 or something.
So it's not just a social media internet kind of thing.
No. It was great. So I think it's had a pretty good run, okay, for any system, right? 140 years, all right? And that. And what I teach at Business 901 is really pull marketing, the funnel of opportunity, where we start with our present customers and we build the adjacencies from that to find our funnel versus trying to gather a customer at the top of the funnel and force fit him down through some, you know, some manipulation method. And I think that adheres to lean marketing very well.
And it sounds like that might be a resource at Business 901. I was going to ask you about that. For listeners that want to find out more information about this whole, you know, big concept of lean marketing sales and what you do, how can they do that? What resources do you have available?
I would go to business901.com. Okay. All right. We talk a lot about sales and marketing just in general. Okay. Not just lean marketing. We go ahead and we talk about that. The funnel of opportunity is an ongoing experiment that I create with people, and they sign up for that, and they get onto a little Trello board with me, and we experiment for 30 days and see where they go.
Excellent. So is that set up in like a coaching sort of relationship?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Very much so, because I don't think that, you know, I'm not looking for a one size fit all type strategy. Okay. Yeah. Because I don't necessarily think that's a great way to market, a great way, to create a marketing system for anyone. All right. But what you do is you can still build standard work. Okay. You still build a culture of PDCA. And then as a result of that, you'll have EDCA.
And we can find that out at business901.com.
That's right, Chad.
Very good. Joe, I appreciate your time. Thanks for talking to the Everyday Innovators, and thanks for the information on lean marketing and sales.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Chad, and thank all your, and I want to thank all the listeners for listening.
It's been great. Thanks. Thanks for listening. Please go to theeverydayinnovator.com/112 for the summary of the discussion with Joe, plus other information. Also, I would love if you could add a review to iTunes for the Everyday Innovator podcast. Doing so makes it easier for other product managers to discover this podcast. And, you know, don't keep it to yourself. Pay it forward with a review. Thanks so much for considering that. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to The Everyday Innovator, which teaches product managers to become product masters. For more resources, please visit our blog at theeverydayinnovator.com.